This is Sean Marcellet, the host of Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast, and you're listening to AT Banter.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of AT Banter.
Banter, banter.
This is, of course, a podcast where we talk with advocates and members of the disability community to educate and inspire better conversation about disability. Hey, my name is Rob Minot, and joining me today, Mr. Ryan Fleury.
And I was a band kid.
Yes, that's right. The audience missed our band geek confessional session just before the mics came on. And hey, look who else it is. It's Mr. Steve Barkley.
I was not in band. I stayed out of it, so I suppose you could call me a resistance band.
Wow. See, well, you know, we did talk about having a bit of a intro segment where Steve's dad jokes. So yeah. That fits.
Yeah, there you go.
It fits right out of the gate. I like it. Well, and of course, I was a band geek as well. I played trumpet. So I, for a hot minute, I actually considered becoming a band teacher. That's how much of a band geek I was, but
hence I didn't. Hence the music minor.
Yeah, that's right. All right, wow, it's hard to top that. We went dove right into band confessional. I don't even know what to say. How are you guys?
I'm thinking of a new podcast now called The Band Confessional.
Actually, it's not a...
And I'm doing just bandy.
Wow. It's on fire. Two dad jokes within the first 3 minutes.
He's been drinking.
Yeah, it's right. Well, it is noon. Oh, dear. All right. Well, so, man, see, I have to say, I don't like these noon shows because, well, I'm at the office, and so I'm not in my home studios. So if I sound weird, that's why, but I don't... I've got these headphones that aren't my usual headphones, and I can't hear anything. It feels weird. My microphone isn't in the right spot. It's just, you know, I'm on edge.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the best shows come through, right?
Yep.
All right. Well, enough of my complaining. Hey, Ryan.
Yeah, Rob.
What the heck are we doing today?
Today we are speaking with Tabitha Kenlin, who is the coordinator of the Audio Description Project over at the American Council of the Blind. Welcome, Tabitha.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Thanks for sticking around so far.
We'll see if you're delighted by the end.
Well, you know, before we start, since we all have dove into the band geek confessional pool, we might as well pull you in with us. So tell the audience, who I'm sure are on pins and needles, were you in band?
I mean, yes, I actually started this whole, the notes on bandness discussion before the recording started. And I played flute and percussion. I was played the xylophone and marimba. And before that, out of school, I started taking guitar lessons when I was like 7 or 8. And I remember watching The Sound of Music and being completely amazed at Julie Andrews, the way she was just swinging her guitar case around. Because to me, this guitar was incredibly heavy. And then when I was, you know, like older and I was picking up a guitar case, I'm like, oh, this isn't as heavy as I thought it was when I was 7.
A lot of kids in band, they when they switch instruments, it's usually because there's a gap in the band somewhere, and the band teacher usually just says, hey, can you play bass clarinet instead of clarinet? Is that what happened with when you switched to xylophone?
No, it was kind of the opposite. My dad was in the Navy, so we moved all the time. And so I was at a new school, and I didn't really feel like I fit with the other flute kids. And one of the first people I made friends with was a percussionist, and she said, oh, you should play xylophone. And I was like, okay. So I did.
That is interesting. Was there a big learning curve?
No, there was, because I hadn't even played piano, so I had to learn the whole.
Wow.
I knew the musical scales, obviously, but the layout of the keys and everything. But then, yeah, it was fun. And when we were playing football games and stuff, because it was American high school, so there was football. You just basically just got to bang. It didn't even really matter if you hit the right note. So.
Well, hopefully this doesn't put a lot of pressure on Ryan, because now that we do have like a professional percussionist in the room, hopefully his cowbell playing doesn't get affected.
Tabitha, you're welcome to join us each week for the cowbell.
Maybe you guys come up with a cowbell choir.
That probably exists.
I got a bad band joke, if you like.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I hate the key E minor.
Why?
It gives me the EBGBs.
I love it.
Thanks. You know what the difference is between a dad joke and a bad joke, right?
A letter?
Yeah, the first letter.
All right, enough silliness. We should actually talk to you about what we brought you on for. Which is, of course, the work that you're doing on the audio description project. But before we dive into that, though, let's maybe just give us a little bit of background on yourself and how you kind of got involved at first with the ACB and the audio description project.
Oh, let's see. That could take up the whole show. But
perfect. Perfect. I'll just take off my headphones and take a nap.
I'll just kick back and relax. I've been calling. I've been saying that I have a checkered past. I've worked in a few different industries. I have a few different advanced degrees. So my route to coordinating the audio description project for ACB was not a straight one. But since you asked sort of multiple questions there, I actually was involved with ACB before I got the job as the audio description project coordinator. When the pandemic started in 2020, everything went into lockdown. ACB started what they now call community calls, and they were just Zoom calls to keep members connected and just having conversations and trying to battle some of that isolation that so many people felt during lockdown. And it started out as just like a few people doing like a little coffee clutch, and it just grew, and now there are usually more than 100 calls a week, and almost all of them are facilitated by ACB members. People just sort of decide, hey, I want to have this call. I want to talk about this thing. So there are like sports talk shows and crafting instruction shows and trivia mornings and book groups. And that was my entree, because my most recent career was as an English professor. So I was out of work in the fall of 2020 and staying with my parents and bored. and missing teaching. I really enjoyed teaching. So I decided to start a book group. And we were going to talk about 18th century British literature, because why not? We started with Jane Austen, something nice and light, got into the heavy stuff later. So I did that every week. We did one book a month and just kind of worked our way through it. So then I went to Dublin and got another master's degree, this one in international relations. And I was back staying with my parents in Virginia looking for a job and still doing the book group. I kept it up even when I was in Dublin. And saw the audio description project coordinator job come up, and I thought, well, I know ACB, and I believe in disability rights and advocacy and all that stuff, so let me apply and see what happens. And they hired me, so here I am. It's been about a year, so I guess they don't hate me.
So for people who maybe who aren't familiar with the Audio Description Project, can you kind of give us a bit of a snapshot in exactly what it is and what you guys do there?
So the ADP, which is easier to say than Audio Description Project, has been around for about 14 years. And it's kind of an octopus. It's got a lot of different things going on. It's mostly, you know, sort of advocacy and awareness and education. One misconception that I've run into a few times is people thinking that we create audio description. We do not.
Right.
We do have a directory on our website of people who do, you know, writers and voice talent and sound engineers and companies and freelancers. So if anyone is looking for someone who can do that, you can perhaps find someone on our website, but the ADP does not actually produce it. But we do, like I said, advocate for more and better audio description. Our website is just chock full of information, and we are in the process of redesigning it. So if you go to the website and have any comments, let me know. I'll take it into consideration. But one of the big attractions to the website is our title catalog. Fred Brack, our webmaster, has been collecting the titles of films and TV series with audio description I think he's been doing that for more than 20 years. And there are now more than 10,000 titles of films and TV series that have audio description. So if you want to watch something and you're curious to know if it has AD, you can go to the website and type in the title and we will tell you, yes, it has audio description and here's where you can find it, or no, sorry, it doesn't. So that's a thing that people find obviously quite useful. We try to build relationships with, you know, studios and industry and the people who are creating the content that we want audio description for, and, you know, who are in charge of the budget, to let them know that this is a really important part of accessibility and inclusion. We think that building those relationships and having conversations and communicating is the best way to do that. Part of that is a couple awards programs that we run, the ADP Awards and the Audio Description Awards Gala, which are just ways for us to recognize when people are doing audio description right. We always, you know, it's always so easy to point out when something is lacking and when we're not happy. But we also think it's important to, you know, jump up and down and cheer when people are doing it great and being, really responsive and proactive and doing it well. So those are a lot of fun. And we also sponsor or hold two training institutes every year. And since the pandemic, those have gone virtual. So I think last year we trained upwards of 80 people on how to think about writing audio description and trying to get more people aware of what it is and how to do it. And then the last thing I'll mention at the moment is probably one of my favorite parts. It's an essay contest for young people, students aged 7 to 21, but we separate them by age group, so we don't have the 7-year-olds competing with the 21-year-olds because that would not be fair. We asked them to choose a video and then write a short essay sort of critiquing the audio description. So just, you know, trying to get their little critical thinking muscles going. Which, you know, this existed before I got here, but, you know, as an English teacher, obviously, I just am all over it. So I don't know if that's a really big nutshell. The ADP does.
No, that's perfect. And I mean, it is a big nutshell. I mean, you guys are doing a lot. It's great that it exists, and it's great that it has been more prevalent lately. But for the, you know, the user on the ground, it can be really time consuming to try to figure out whether or not something that they're interested in is going to have audio description or not. And that's where this, you know, what you guys are doing is really invaluable. I mean, Ryan's talked all the time about his frustration with that very thing.
Yeah, you start a title on Netflix and then you bring up the audio settings and see if it has audio description. And You know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You don't always know. And so that was my question, is how do you guys know?
That is the domain of our webmaster, Fred Brack, who has secret databases and algorithms and a coding language that only he speaks.
Sure.
But I'm only slightly exaggerating, to be honest. But this is something that we're kind of trying to streamline as we redesign our website, is trying to manage all that data. But we kind of go back to those relationships. We actually do get a lot of our data directly from studios. Okay. They will just send us a spreadsheet or a CSV or something. And that, here are the titles that are coming out this week with audio description.
Right.
Sometimes with some studios that goes smoothly, and sometimes there are little hiccups along the way. And Fred is fantastic about just sort of, poking when people need to be poked, and also just doing his own research and testing things. A lot of it is just those, from those conversations and relationships that we've built, and just getting information kind of straight from the people who are creating it.
Right.
Well, yeah, and we should mention too that we're not just talking about the streaming services. You guys are also tracking DVDs, mm-hmm. Blu-rays, mm-hmm. TV, and you've even stepped into things like where AD exists for things like museums or parks and stuff. So, I mean, that's a huge chunk of content that you guys are sort of trying to track. What's that like on a day-to-day basis? Like, how big is the team, and how hard is it to sort of be tracking all of this information?
So first, let me thank you for pointing out that it's not just recorded media, because I was remiss in not mentioning that earlier. Audio description actually originally started in live theater. People who are blind were going to theater and, saying, I want to know what's going on the stage. I love this live performance thing, but, why can't I don't know what's happening. So that's where audio description really got its start. Then I can really geek out on you and tell you that if you think about ancient Greek theater and Shakespeare, there was a lot of built-in audio description into the script and into the dialogue and the things that people were saying. But right. I'll save that for another show.
Well, actually, that is interesting. We can hit back on that, actually. Don't let me forget, because I do want to loop back onto that.
Okay. So that is another piece of it, is trying to, there's a section on our website, which I should also probably tease a little bit if you guys don't mind. It is adp.acb.org. I can say it every 5 minutes if
yes,
you
please.
Need to. A little bit of an alphabet soup there. So we do try to also have a list of theaters and museums, state by state and internationally, that, places that we know provide or have provided audio description in the past. And that one is a little trickier to maintain. So we're honestly still kind of working on ways to keep that maintained and up to date. Because sometimes, a performing arts center might do audio description for one show, but not another show, especially if they've got touring companies come through. Some touring companies might be touring with their audio description and another one might not. So it can also kind of vary. And then a lot of live performances will have just sort of, one or two performances that are audio described or, sign language interpreted or whatever. Whereas when it comes to movie theaters and streaming services, you can generally count on them to have audio description kind of on all the time. So it is a lot. And I am the only full-time paid staff member. And my position is actually relatively new. The person who had it before me with kind of half ADP and half grant writing. She's now the full-time associate director of development. So she went, you know, pursued that side of it and left the ADP side open. We have, you know, Fred Rack, our webmaster, is, you know, a wonderful paid consultant. We also have Timothy Nguyen, who does the research for the daily TV listings. So if you want to know what's on TV tonight with audio description in the U.S., I'm afraid. Sorry, Canada. You can go on the website and find that out. So they're a great team. But beyond that, everyone are volunteers. Kim Charleston and Carl Richardson are the co-chairs of the ADP, but they both have, you know, full-time jobs, and everything they do for the ADP is just sort of extra and bonus. They work incredibly hard. And we have, I think, 6 or 7 subcommittees that focus on different areas. So we have one focused on media, which is, you know, like movie theaters and TV shows and, you know, studios and stuff like that. And we actually do have one focused on the performing arts and museums and the parks. And then we've got committees for the essay contest and the ADP awards and stuff like that. And all of those people just volunteer their time to attend meetings and, you know, do some work and try to keep promoting audio description.
Wow. Okay. Well, that blows me away, because there's a lot of content here, and it's only growing every single day.
But yeah, I mean, we've even heard that people at, you know, like in the industry will come to our website to see what's audio description. You know, yeah. Like even the people working at the studios will be like, oh, wait, does that thing have audio description? And so everybody loves our website.
So now you've only been there a year. So I'm not sure if you'll know the answer to this. What's the past year or so been like? Has it been really busy? Because we keep hearing more and more about audio description, and more studios are jumping on board and are realizing that this is something that they need to be doing. So have you been feeling that?
I think so. Like we, you know, our title catalog, Fred knows exactly, you know, how many titles are in the catalog, and it exceeded 10,000 in the fall. Wow. For the first time. So that was kind of a big deal, you know. And it does change, because you know, streaming services don't, you know, when a movie or a show goes onto a streaming service, it doesn't always stay there forever. Which is kind of irritating, but that's a whole.
Totally agree with you on that.
Beyond my purview. So, you know, the number will sort of fluctuate, and it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, fewer titles have audio description. It might just be that there are fewer titles in general, if that makes sense. So, you know, the number is never the same month. Yeah, I think even week to week. But, you know, it got above 10,000 and it stayed there. And I think it is starting to just become much more ubiquitous. I think this year, all 10 nominees for the Best Picture Oscar have audio description. And that's the first time that's ever happened. I think last year it was all but like 1 or 2. And then this year it's all 10. So, you know, stuff like that is just really, really great to hear. You know, like every week when ACB has its staff meeting, or like whenever there's a committee meeting, you know, somebody is always talking about, you know, a movie that they saw. And, you know, it's just a you know, tangible demonstration of the importance of audio description and that inclusion. You know, when you have sort of these mixed groups of sighted people and people who are on the blindness spectrum, and they're all talking about the same cultural thing. Yeah. You know, they were all able to participate and, you know, talk about this movie, or what's really been increased in the last year as well has been audio description for live events. It was kind of like here and there, like there might be like, you know, the presidential inauguration, but it's just, again, becoming much more commonplace, that people are just sort of expecting it. I know there was a big deal, because, you know, Americans are not all Americans, but a lot of Americans are crazy royal watchers. So, there was a, a huge flurry of excitement for the coronation and
right.
And then, you know, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade and just, you know, all of these sort of big events. It's slowly becoming, you know, you kind of are starting to feel like, okay, yeah, I can maybe count on this. And there are still some outliers. You know, there's still some things that people get grumpy that aren't audio described, but I really think it's just a matter of time because, you know, when it approaches ubiquity, you know, it's just going to be something that people expect and people, you know, the studios are going to hear about it if they don't.
Yeah, I do feel like it's definitely moving in that way. I mean, we've been talking about it for years on the show. And I definitely feel like in the past year or two, there really has been a shift into definitely more prevalent. And I think it's more of outliers that actually don't have audio description. I mean, Ryan, you're more dialed into like a lot of the streaming services and stuff and watching stuff on there. Is it, do you find that? Do you find that you're running into more and more shows that actually have it now?
But even just on Netflix alone, the more shows I watch, the more I hear about companies providing the audio description, like IDC in Europe and, you know, of course, Descriptive Video Works here in BC, and more companies all the time that I'd never heard of before. So, you know, I think it is being adopted at a really, really fast rate.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, I mean, that's the goal, right? The goal is to make it exactly the same as closed captioning. I mean, you don't find anything without closed captioning. I mean, you just don't. You'd have a huge uproar if something was released with no closed captioning options. So, you know, that's where we need to get to. But I mean, but I think that, you know, the project really does raise a good point is that, well, and until it is ubiquitous, I guess, we still need to know what is and what isn't for the end user. So, you know, this is where the project is still really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, and keep in mind too, that we're hearing and seeing more of the studios and the art projects and live theater, but we're still missing a lot of the independent filmmakers, right? Mm-hmm. There's still a huge market that's of non-described titles out there.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say that's, so many goals, you know, so many goals, so little time. But one of the sort of long-term goals is to think about ways to introduce and sort of integrate audio description into film school curriculum.
Right.
You know, because if you go to film school and, you know, you learn about casting and lighting and planning your shoot and, you know, all of the technical things, but nobody mentions audio description to you, then, you know, chances are you're not going to know about it until... Yeah. You know, somebody does. So if it was just a standard part of the curriculum where, okay, you know, these are the things you need to think about when you are making your movie and thinking about your budget. And especially one thing that we really advocate for is that, you know, having that, the audio description and just any sort of accessibility feature part of the process from the beginning. You know, the analogy that I think a lot of people use is that, you know, we've all encountered them, those ramps that are just sort of a glob of cement, you know, between the sidewalk and the step, that you're like, how is anybody actually supposed to get a wheelchair over this thing? It was just so obviously, you know, thrown on there at the last minute because you had to, you know, pick the box that, oh yeah, we're accessible. But it's not really meaningful. And, you know, obviously audio description is pretty much always useful, but, you know, ideally it's not just something that's tacked on at the end and squeezed in where convenient, but it is something that is thought about throughout the entire process and, you know, really integrated into the whole creative process. Cause I think that audio description and accessibility is an opportunity, you know, it's one of those showing my drama geek tendencies, but it's a yes and moment, right? Is that taking what someone is suggesting and saying, yes, that's a great idea, and let's also do this, rather than regarding accessibility as a burden, as an obligation, as something, you know, boring and heavy and tedious. it can be another opportunity for creativity and imagination. Yeah. And I think the more people embrace that and have it part of their creative process from the beginning, I think the better it's going to be for everyone.
Yeah, that raises a really interesting point. Because, you know, we talk about that in terms of accessibility, like in the technology realm as well. Mm. Like we're always right. saying that, you know, in order to make something really accessible, what needs to happen is that it needs to be thought of at that development stage while mm-hmm. the app or soft piece of software or whatever is being developed. It's much easier to bake in accessible features at that point than building the thing and then tacking on your accessibility after the fact. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a really great way to look at this as well. A few weeks ago, you know, for the first time, I kind of heard this term integrated description, which is the mm-hmm. idea of instead of, you know, producing a show and then producing, you know, audio description around it, is that you, again, you bake in that audio description into the script, into mm-hmm. the way that the show is shot. And I mean, it may be unrealistic to think that's something that everybody's going to do, but I mean, it's certainly something that, again, I think that maybe would start to happen if we started to do what you're talking about, which is bringing this idea of audio description into the creative process and into mm-hmm. the sort of the germ of the initial idea, rather than just waiting to solve that problem mm-hmm. after the fact.
Yeah, and it quite nicely loops back to the idea of the ancient Greek theater.
I know, right? See, I have a plan.
Well done.
I know what I'm doing.
Like you're a pro. Like you've done this before. it's something that I explored for a conference on a disability in the creative arts at De Montfort University in the UK last year. And Joel Snyder, who is actually the founder of the Audio Description Project, and he was the senior consultant for a number of years, and he's just kind of stepped back from that role at the end of this past year, but he is staying on as a volunteer on numerous of the committees, and he's also the one who teaches the Audio Description Institute, which is now open for registration, by the way, in case anyone is interested, and it is virtual, so you can participate wherever you are. And we do have people on the blindness spectrum and people who are sighted in the classes. I have low vision myself, and I audited the class last year when I started, and it was fascinating. And we had group works where we group projects where we work together to create audio description for a short script. And I think it was actually really useful for the fully sighted people to have someone with low vision in their group, because they sort of gave me a quick, you know, off the cuff description, but then they would talk about details that they had all seen that I didn't know were there. So I was like, wait a minute, what are you guys talking about? So it was a lot of fun. But Joel and I and Susan Glass, who is on the essay contest committee, she's one of the co-chairs of that committee, and she's a retired English professor and a poet, so also a lover of words. But we did a presentation for this Disability in the Creative Arts conference last year, and I talked about a little bit about audio description in Shakespeare, and you know, in Hamlet, in the scene where the players are catching the conscience of the king, Ophelia and Hamlet are telling us how the king is reacting. You know, he starts, he stands, they're telling us what's going on. And so you don't actually need an audio describer to tell you the king stands up when a character in the play is telling you the king stands up.
Right.
Because you know, you think about the ancient theaters, you know, the old theaters, like nobody had opera glasses. There were no microphones. And you know, I was lucky enough to be in Athens a few years ago, and I got all verklempt. I'm like, this is where theater was born, and it was so cool. But you know, there were these huge open air, you know, amphitheaters. And, you know, if you're sitting up on the hill having your picnic, you probably can't see. Even if you've got the world's best vision, you can't see everything that's happening on the stage. And that's what the chorus does. The chorus is explaining to you what is happening. So I love that we're kind of coming full circle when it comes to accessibility and thinking about, you know, yes, we need the technology. Obviously, assistive technology is fantastic and wonderful and useful. But in some ways, thinking about the way that things were accessible before, we can borrow some of those techniques and use them today.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a burden. You know, it can actually be part of like a creative process. There can be really some really interesting content, I think, developed if you put this idea into the hands of the creatives and who knows what they might come up with. And really, I mean, you're absolutely right in the sense of, able-bodied people can use all of this stuff as well. Like, listen, hey, I constantly use subtitles now. Like I'm all about subtitles and closed captioning because I find that I engage with the content and I pick up on things that I don't when I'm not using them. Same thing for audio description. I mean, somebody's in the kitchen and they can't actually see the TV. Well, they can still watch something because they can just turn that track on and continue to chop up vegetables for their dinner. They don't have to worry about seeing the screen. So this idea really benefits everybody.
Yeah, you know, we've heard stories about, you know, obviously people on the blindness spectrum are the first people that you think about as an audience for audio description, but also language learners, it can be really helpful. People with learning differences, people sort of, you know, processing differences, like maybe they just can't take in all of that action on the screen and process it fast enough. But if someone is telling them, you know, this is what's happening, then okay, I keep up. I can't remember who it was, but it was somebody in the ADP mentioned in a meeting that they were taking an Uber or something like that. And the driver was actually listening to movies while he was driving around, you know, waiting for his next client. And he turned on the audio description track so he could, you know, listen to the movie while he was driving around and, you know, obviously not, watch the movie and get into a car accident. So it's got, and I think, you know, this is, you know, you mentioned closed captioning and, they did sort of face a similar struggle initially. And, you know, now so many people, it is taken for granted. And, you know, you go into a noisy sports bar or something and the closed captioning is on because nobody can hear what's going on. It's kind of that universal design sort of idea is that, you know, if it's helpful for this one population, chances are it's going to be helpful for a lot of other populations as well.
Yeah, that's right. So I want to talk a little bit about the training aspect of this, because this is also something that, do you get the sense of like the training part of audio description has really started to pick up as well? Seem to be a lot more schools and like places where people can go. And there seems to be sort of a curriculum that has started to really be developed. What's your impression of all of that? And do you guys really get involved in that part?
Yes. the Audio Description Institute is what we call our training. And it has been around for a number of years. Originally it was held in person at the ACB conference and convention. But in the past, 4 years now, it's moved online and some people miss the in-person interaction, but we're just able to reach so many more people. I think so far, registration opened earlier this month, and I think we have people from 5 different countries. So it's just really great to have the range. There are more. I've talked to other people who are developing or already running their own training sessions. Joel Snyder, wrote the book called The Visual Made Verbal. And it is a kind of a history of audio description, but also provides, some training. And everyone who registers for the Audio Description Institute gets a free copy of that book. And we've also, some of the not me personally, and this has been going on for a number of years before I was involved, but they've been working on a certification program that audio describers can go through and sort of, you know, take a test and be certified to, you know, sort of write those audio description scripts. And that is something that, you know, again, as a teacher, I've been fascinated by the education side of things. And apparently there's a debate going on about how present the audio description should be. You know, like, can it really be subjective and, you know, reportage, journalistic, just the facts, or is it, you know, should it be a little bit more interpretive and emotional? And so there are all these two camps battling it out. And I think that's actually really exciting because, you know, 15 years ago, that conversation could not have taken place because everybody had to put their energy into getting the audio description done in the first place.
Right.
But now, since, you know, there's still, obviously, as we've, you know, discussed, there's still work to do to get to that level where, you know, it's even more prevalent, but that we can have those conversations about what makes for the best audio description. And, you know, I think that's really interesting. I've talked to some people who, especially, you know, I know I personally am a classic film buff. And so I've talked to other sort of, you know, people who just really love film. And, you know, one thing that I've missed as my eyesight has gotten worse is I used to love the, you know, the film noir and the black and white movies. And I used to love to notice the shadows and the shading and the physical positions of the characters and, you know, who has his back to the camera and, you know, which is all of those super geeky details, which you don't get in audio description. So we've had conversations where we're like, you know, can we get sort of the audio description extended geek track, you know, where you actually sort of pause the movie for a minute so they can tell you exactly where everyone is standing. And you could, oh, that's so significant because, like, he's by the window and she's by the door and, you know, whatever. So, you know, I don't know that that's going to become common, but I do think it's a lot of fun. And I think it's a really good sign that those conversations are happening.
Well, that could happen. They've got director's cut and extended director's cut and the super extended director's cut, right?
So, and they've got the commentary, you know, where people are talking over the movie, telling you.
Sure.
It reminds me, I'm dating myself here, but I don't know if you remember the VH1 pop-up videos.
The
little, like, trivia bits would come up, but, you know, obviously you'd need that to be audio. I think something like that could be a lot of fun.
Well, I think that it's really interesting too, and this is where I think why it would be important to get this being thought of at that creative stage, because, you know, for a lot of filmmakers, they're framing the shot, they're lighting the shot, all of these things they're doing to create a certain tone or a certain, you know,
mood or
exactly, or, you know, they're trying to emulate, you know, an emotional state that maybe the main character is in, or to unsettle the viewer. And some of that stuff, if it's just a script writer who's just literally just kind of taking and describing the action, and they don't have an insight into what the filmmaker is actually trying to do, that stuff kind of gets missed.
Exactly.
So it would be really great to have these tracks written at that, you know, creative development stage, because I think that you could really, really create some really engaging content if you did start to do that. And again, you know, maybe it's shooting for the moon to dream that this is going to be ubiquitous. But I think it would be really interesting if filmmakers and studios, you know, started to take a crack at this and to really do some out of the box creative thinking when it comes to audio description.
Yeah. And I think that's something, again, that could, you know, appeal to, you know, film buffs, film geeks, you know, regardless of the site level, like, who doesn't want to know, like, you know, why a scene was set a certain way?
Well, and we wouldn't get the jump scare described to us before the jump scare happened, right? So,
and then a cat jumps out.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think my favorite is when people say, you know, you hear the sound of a door closing, and then the audio, the narrator says, he closes the door. Like, thanks. Or, yeah. You know, he starts the car engine. Like, that's what that was.
Yeah. That's right. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it is great. And it signals that we've moved into the next stage in that we're not fighting for audio description. Now we can get into the fight for good audio description.
Yeah.
If people do want to check out the Audio Description Project, and I know you've already done this, but I'm going to make you go to work again. But where the heck can people find it on the web and use this really amazing resource?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. The web address is adp.acb.org, and you can find out all sorts of fun things about audio description. Check if the latest show your friends are obsessed with on Netflix is audio described. You can sign up for our audio description email discussion list if you just are, I mean, geek is like our word of the day, so if you want to continue and just geek out about audio description, those are your people. Join us.
Excellent. Well, listen, we want to thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. And thank you for all the work that you guys are pouring into this, because I really do see this as a really important resource. And not only that, like just working in this field and getting audio description out there and to spread it. Yeah, I think it's really been invaluable.
Yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me. It's great to be able to highlight the project and all of the great people who are who have been working so hard for so many years and continue to make it what it is.
Excellent. And please come back because we're going to be putting together a woodwind trio.
No, I want to play the marimba.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, perfect. Okay. You can be our percussion section.
Okay.
We'll teach Steve the clarinet.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thanks again. And please come back anytime.
Thanks. It was fun. You guys are great. Appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Tabitha.
Okay. Bye.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care.
Wow. Well, that's cool. This is an incredible website, I have to say. The sheer number.
Well, I think it's the only resource directory that actually lists the titles and platforms where you can find audio described programs.
100%.
You know, so.
100%.
Yeah. Kudos to them.
So, but this is great. I didn't realize that all of the Academy Award nominations for Best Picture had audio description. That's amazing.
For the first time ever, she said.
Yeah, which is great. So, you know, and you know, earlier in the year, like remember that what's that Netflix show? All the Light That You Cannot See, I think it's called, right?
Yeah, there's a new series on TV called Sight Unseen or something now.
Oh, really?
As well.
No kidding.
With a blind or partially sighted private investigator who uses actually an app similar to Be My Eyes AI, and she has a virtual assistant or assistant that she calls. I think it's called Sight Unseen.
Yeah, I heard about that. Is that a Netflix show?
No, it's on TV.
That's on TV. Yeah, I know. I did hear a little bit about that. Yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, we're starting to see more and more audio description. We're seeing some representation.
Yep.
Things are happening. So, hey Steve, so are you set up over there in the green room? Is that where you're recording from?
No, I'm actually right at my desk.
Oh, no way. Okay, cool. Yep.
I just told Greg to shut up.
Shut up, Greg. That's great. How's the open house preparation coming along?
Good. We're pretty much ready. We're just waiting to, you know, hear how many people are coming and you know, looking for RSVPs. I'm going to send out another round of invitations.
That should work. Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, this episode is going to come out before March 7th. So you want to plug the open house in case anyone's listening who's in the Vancouver area that wants to come by?
Yeah, absolutely. So our open house is going to be on March 7th between noon and 7 p.m. The doors will be open. There will be snacks and drinks, and people are welcome to pop in and check out the place. You know, we have a ton of stuff here now from, you know, we go as simple as white canes and, you know, things like talking thermometers, through to, you know, virtual reality based headset magnification systems and we have wearable OCR systems. We've got computers here, braille displays, more video magnifiers you can shake a stick at, optical magnification, specialized lighting systems, sunscreens. Oh gosh, what else is out there? There's a lot of stuff here now. A lot more than we even have on our website.
Yeah. Wow.
Which we need to address as well. But that's for another day.
That's right. Listen, man, I think we need to rename Canadian Assistive Technology into something like Crazy Steve's Assistive Technology Emporium.
There you go. I won't be undersold.
We got everything.
Everything must go. Including me. We should probably wrap this up. I have to go.
Yeah, so fair enough. Great. So what's the address if people are interested in heading on down?
The address is Unit 106-828 West 8th Avenue in Vancouver. And if people want instructions on how to get here, they can go on our website. I believe it's on our contact page.
That's right.
Towards the bottom of the contact page, there's information on how to get into the building and so forth. There are some pretty good instructions there that Greg spent days ruminating about.
Shut up, Greg.
Yeah, shut up, Greg. Come on down. We need bodies in the place. We're getting bored in here.
Well, and if that isn't an incentive enough, not the entire cast, but some of the cast, 3/4 of the cast of the AT Banter podcast will be on hand to meet as well, signing autographs. So come on down.
Yeah, ready.
There you go. Okay, anything else?
No, they can find us on Facebook, X, Mastodon, and atbanter.com.
Hey, they can also email us if they so desire at cowbell@atbanter.com.
Wow, that was ruthlessly efficient there, guys.
I know. Ryan did that last week,
that's
too. Right. So
that's going to about do it for us this week.
Wow, okay. Ryan just taking over the end of the show.
Don't let the door hit in the ass on the way out.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. All right, everybody. That is going to about do it for us this week. Big thanks, of course, to Tabitha for joining us. And we will see everybody next week.
This podcast has been brought to you by Canadian Assistive Technology, providing low vision and blindness solutions, as well as physical access solutions and augmentative communication aids across Canada. Find us online at www.canastech.com, or if you're in the Vancouver Lower Mainland, visit our storefront at number 106-828 West 8th Avenue in Vancouver. That's one block off Broadway at Willow. You can reach us by phone, toll-free at 1-844-795-8324 or by email at sales@canastech.com.